So up next, we've got our keynote speakers. I knew you guys would be a little bit low on energy at this time of the day. We've still got a tea break coming up. We're going to push through. Please just respond. I see the response rate's very low. Our keynote speaker or guest speakers for today is Piers and Siseko. I'll leave it up to them to introduce themselves because I'm sure I won't be able to do justice to it. But please just give them a hand of welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's great. Great when your equipment works. Hold on 1 second. Okay. It's great when you're scheduled on a Friday afternoon. It makes you nervous, you know. But it's great to see that so many people are still here. So, in case you weren't sure, I'm Piers and this is the circle. If you had it the right way around, I'm not sure. But this afternoon we're going to share a little bit of a story which we were very privileged to enjoy and to experience. In fact, I don't know how many of you here have seen the movie Beyond the River. Could just put your hand up if you've seen the film. Okay, so we've got a smattering. We've got a few, which is great. So the film was based on Siseko and my journey together. And, Hollywood is not reality, but I hope that the real story is just as exciting. So I'm going to start and tell you, in fact, I'm going to start by showing you a short video clip which will kind of contextualize what it is we're going to talk about. Then I'll tell you a little bit about my story and background in the lead-up to meeting Siseko, and he'll follow on by doing the same.
Really what we're looking for was some sort of a documentary, something to just lift the sport and lift the initiative that was the Soweto Canoeing Recreation Club. So that was the beginning. Then we met with Robbie Thorpe and Craig Frymond and at Ronnie Aptieka, guys in the film industry, and they said to us, you know, that's all fine and well, but if you really want to do something big, we think this could be a feature film.
3, 2, 1, go!
And so it's a machine. He's won 9 golds in the dizzy. Next year I want to do the race. Maybe I can do it with you.
I was happy, and it was like I'm dreaming, seeing like what I used to do. Being played in the big screen, because I used to go to cinemas and watch some movies. But like, I never thought one day I'll see my story being acting in the real big screen.
It's really special because the essence of our journey together and the spirit really of our partnership and the competing and the paddling and the goal and the achievement and all of that, eventually getting there through really facing many obstacles, that's all there in the film, and that's really what's essential to me, to the message that we want to get out there. The individual characters and their personalities on screen are I hope totally different to ours. The experiences they go through are sometimes a lot tougher than I've ever had to face. My character I don't think is a particularly nice person, so I hope that's not true to true to reality. So yeah, I think that they've made some good changes, and they had to adapt it. It needed to be a feature film which would really speak to people, and in a very short space of time. So they needed to make some changes, and I really think they've done an amazing job. I think it's an incredible film, and I just hope people get out there and see it, because it's got so much to tell South Africans.
Why do you want to do the race with me? You're strong, and you don't give up, and I want to be like that. You're the one who said we must become like one person, and we're not. Is that the ocean? That's the first time I see it.
So, can you hear me all right if I walk away? Can you? Great. Okay, so, as I said, you know, yes, I made a film, which was, in fact, incredibly successful, more successful than Sturkinico predicted and more successful than many of us had hoped. But I think, you know, for me, what I want to speak to you today about is the reality and the real story on which it was based. So, you know, I was just a very normal kind of kid at school. I wasn't, I definitely wasn't performing academically well enough to be an actuary, that I can tell you. And most of the time what I really wanted to do was run. Somehow running was something that I was good at and it was something that I enjoyed. And it was, for me, something I became passionate about. My academics were rather neglected. And I kind of just got really focused on my sport. And when the other thing I really enjoyed actually was English, was writing and literature and poetry, and not so much on the math side. Eventually I left school. I went to Wits to study, and I found a bunch of mates there at the Wits Athletics Club who were just as passionate, enthusiastic as myself about this this running sport. For us, it became almost like a cult. We organized our own strange races. You know, we raced a kilometer down Jansmuts Avenue past the zoo there at midnight. And we had these crazy events that we invented, which we enjoyed. And as I say, it was kind of quite a strange sort of cult thing, but we loved this sport. It's a very healthy kind of cult thing to be involved in, actually. You know, people say, I've got my drug and I'm happy with it. Well, for us, it was a very healthy thing that we were getting kind of involved in. When I was in around third year, fourth year, I think it was, I was 20, approaching 21, and I was out running one day, and my knee started to hurt, my right knee, in fact, and it was the start of what was quite a serious injury, and I wound up going from specialist to specialist, physios, kineticists, biokineticists, surgeons. Eventually, I saw one of the top surgeons in the country who said to me, "You know what? There is an operation that I can do, and there's a 50% chance." Now, you guys like to deal with figures, but he said to me, "There's a 50% chance that it'll be better if I do the operation." And I said, "Well, that's great. What about the other 50%?" And he said, "Well, there's a 50% chance that it will be worse." And I thought, well, I can walk. I'm okay. You know, can't do the thing I really love most, but I can do this at least. I kind of thought, well, maybe that's it. And you know, I'd got fairly good at running. I wasn't the best runner in the country, but at the South African Students Champs, for example, I'd run a 5,000 meters, a 5K in 16 minutes and a few seconds. And that's a great time for your average runner or jogger. But you know, we were really competitive in our crew. And there was a guy, Mark Ince, who was a good mate of mine, a good runner as well. He'd finished just behind me. And he said, "You do realize that if Haile Gebrselassie," and Haile Gebrselassie was the world champion over 5,000 meters, world record holder, Olympic champion at the time. And he said to me, if Haile had been running today, he would have lapped us twice. So, you know, we are good at this thing, but not the best, not fantastic in terms of kind of world, worldwide standards. And what actually happened was, while I had this, I was dealing with this injury and trying to get over it. It was quite traumatic, actually, you know, when someone is so passionate about something and they're told they're not going to be able to do it anymore. I went to see my dentist, and, you know, dentists like to talk to you while they're pushing things in your mouth and dealing with your, you know, sucking your, all your saliva out, and you can't talk when they do that, but then they ask you questions and tell you things, and I don't know, somehow they enjoy that type of, it's a bit one-sided, the conversation. But he was saying to me, so how's, he was a runner, my dentist, and he was also a canoeist, and he was saying to me, how's your running going? And, and he was saying to me, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but why don't you try canoeing? Canoeing is an interesting sport. It's an endurance sport, which is what you like and you're good at. And it's very easy on the knees because you're sitting down you're sitting down while you're doing it. So I thought, you know, I've always been a pretty skinny sort of guy. And I thought of cold water and I don't know if that was sort of the thing for me. But, you know, he had these things in my mouth. It was hard to argue. So he lent me a boat and a paddle and I gave the sport a bash. And it turned out for me that this injury that had been such a really a drawback and a stumbling block in my time turned out to be the most fortunate thing. It was a blessing in disguise because I was actually a much better canoeist than I had been a runner. I enjoyed a wonderful career in the sport of canoeing. When I say career, I don't think you can actually make a living out of it. There are very few people who can, but I represented South Africa on 7 occasions, World Cups, World Championships, fantastic events. I won most of the races in the country, but the one race I really absolutely loved was the Doozy Canoe Marathon. Now, the Doozy is a race on the rivers between Pietermaritzburg and Durban, so it's bit like Comrades Marathon, on the rivers though, it never alternates and goes back up, fortunately. So that's one difference. But what it does do is it alternates singles and doubles every year. So one year all the main competition is in the singles event, so you're in a boat on your own, and the next year it'll be in a doubles event. You'll be partnered with somebody if you want to compete. And I had a fantastic career in this Doozy. It's a tough race. It's a hard race. You're going through up and down through rapids in the river. You can get washed out of your boat. You can get hurt. There's some sections where you take shortcuts across either a much shorter distance on land or where there's something that's too dangerous, a waterfall or a weir or something that's too, or a dam wall, something that's too dangerous to shoot in your boat. And you get out and run with your boat, but it's hot and humid. It gets to 40 degrees there in the Doozy Valley, and it's, you know, that KZN humidity in the valleys and the steep hills that you run up. It's a tough event, but I really loved it, and I was good at it. For finishing in the top 10 of the Doozy, as with the Comrades Marathon, you get a gold medal if you finish in the top 10. And I managed to achieve 9 gold medals by the 2013 Doozy race. And, you know, by then, I was, in terms of an athlete's point of view, I was getting to the end of my career. I was 39 years old. Most of the guys competing at the front there will be between around 1920 and up to 30. So time was running out to get a 10th gold medal. And lined up for that 2013 Doozy, hoping it was a singles race, hoping to get a 10th gold medal and maybe sort of walk away from the sport a bit, focus on family and work and other things that kind of I've maybe been neglecting over the years. But I'm gonna hand over to Soseko. His is, as the movie director told us, his is the more interesting story, actually. They told me very quickly, it's great, and you've got a job you love and a family, and it's boring, which is why they Hollywoodified the movie so much. But I'm going to hand over to Soseko to tell you how he got to that 2013 Doozy.
Thanks, Piers. Hi, everyone. As Piers said, my name is Soseko Ntondini. I was born in Eastern Cape, called Manfred. And when I was young, I was a naughty boy. I used to run. I loved running, but I wasn't competing. So staying in Eastern Cape, I used to have this dream that, this wish that I want to come in Joburg. You know, I heard a lot about Joburg. It's a city of gold. nice buildings, nice lights. So I had that, and I wished, always had this thing in my mind that one day I wish to go and experience this life. So luckily my dad found a job in Velcom in the mines. So my dad break a story to us. He said, "Hey guys, we're going to Joburg." And I was so excited, like, always, I saw that my wish is coming through. So we went from Eastern Cape in Manfred, we went to live in Cape Town. So in Cape Town, we went to live in a squatter camp, in a shack. So there, we were not allowed to go outside because it was dangerous. We were not allowed to leave our premises. And I was a bit disappointed, but I was still happy that I'm in Gauteng, I'm in Joburg. My dad used to leave us in our shack, went to go and work in Velcom for a week and come back. And when time goes on, like after a year or something, luckily my dad found another place next to Paragwala Hospital in Elias Mutualedi. So that's where I saw the life. It was also a squatter camp, but I enjoyed myself. I went outside. I used to make friends. And I love being like outside, running around, being naughty, doing some silly things. And the sad part is my dad used to come and ask me, "Hey son, do you play sport?" I said, "Yeah, dad, I play soccer. I'm a backline." I didn't even know what position it was, but I said to him, "I'm a backline. I'm a defender." So where I grew up, there's a river. It's a dirty river. So we're not allowed to go there. We like being naughty. We used to go there just to enjoy playing the water. So we used to get this old fridge, old used fridge. We used to like wrap the fridge apart, and there were some bowens there. So we used to take those bowens, play in the water just to make ourselves like feeling like we're in the boat, but we even didn't know that we're in the boat. So one day there's a guy started the club in Soweto called the Rhino. He's a colored guy. He came to us like we were in the garage watching a TV, watching a wrestling. He came to us, he said, "Hey guys, come and play canoe." He said, "Canoe? Never heard about canoe." we said, "What's canoe?" He said, "Canoe." And luckily he was going with another black guy. And that guy said, "Ikepe." Oh, he said, "Oh." So we started knowing that, oh, it's like it's a sport in the water. We went there, we were like so excited because he used to love water. We went there, we loved that sport, we were enjoying ourselves. And we thought this sport is a white sport thing. Like, let's go and enjoy ourselves. We never go far about this sport because white people are doing this sport. So us, I never seen a black guy doing this sport. So I thought, let me just enjoy myself just to have fun. And while I was After our practice, I had to go back home and tell my parents, and tell my mom, and tell my dad that I'm playing this canoe sport. And luckily they were sitting in a table, so I had to break the news. I said, "Mom, Dad, I'm playing canoe." My mom, they look at me like they didn't even know what I was saying. And my dad said, "Is that a soccer?" I said, "It's a canoe." I also said, "Igap." And my mom was so frustrated. My dad was amazed. He said, "My dad said, I thought you were playing soccer." I said, "Yeah, but I left soccer a long time and I wasn't happy in the field. So I went for a new sport." They said, "What's canoe?" I said, you play in the water." My dad said, "In this, and because where I played, there was a big dam, and they used to warn us about that dam." And they said, "You're playing in that dam?" I said, "Yeah, it's safe." It's safe. They give us life jacket. There's some people around us. And my mom said, my dad smiled. My mom said, "You're not going there." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because there's a big snake in that dam that will eat you." I think because we, as black people, got that belief in the water that there are big snakes that were going to eat us. My mom had that belief. I also had that belief, but I said, let me take chances. uh, But my mom said, you're not doing the sport. And my dad, like, my dad didn't even had to like, to come with his own view. He said, my son, you can hear your mom say, don't have to play a sport. My dad, when my mom goes to bed, my dad said, don't worry, son, go and play the sport. I'll lie to your mom, I'll say, you went to play soccer. So I keep on playing the sport, enjoying myself. Every day I come back home, I lie to my mom. He'll ask me, how did practice go? I said, fine. And it was like boring. Every day I had to come, different stories. And luckily one day, the club took us to Imarensha in Drinside. So in Drinside, it's where we meet peers and we, some like a lot of white people are doing the sport. And after our time trial, they give us this food parcel to take back at home. So we are happy that we received something in the sport. And my dad was not at home. My mom was worried. I came back late, around 8 o'clock. My mom was worried. So when I get back at home, I put this food parcel in the table. And she asked me, where have you been? I said, oh, mom, you know, I never stopped playing the sport. She said, why? I thought I made it clear to you. She said, you don't have to play the sport. I said, mom, but it's safe. And like while I was telling the story, I was taking everything out that was in that food parcel. I was taking everything out. I said, mom, look what you got also in the sport. She said, oh, okay, my son, you can continue play the sport. Because at least you're getting something out of it. So since from then, I started playing the sport, enjoying myself. Though I had that thing in my mind that it's a white sport thing. Let me just enjoy myself, receive those food parcels, take them back at home. And one day, the club, the company that sponsored the club, Edrich, they took us to KZN. So in KZN, it's where this canoe sport, a lot of black people are doing it. So it's where I meet a lot of black folks who are doing the sport. And they introduced us to the guys who did well in Doozy. They said, these two black guys that did well in Doozy, and they're the first black guys to win the podium in Doozy. So I was so interested, and I said to myself, this is not a white, it's not a white sport thing, actually. And since from then, I said to myself, I want to do well in Doozy, because Doozy is in South Africa, they recognize Doozy because they got this, they televise it, it appear in the news, appear in the papers. So I said to myself, because Doozy, it's a nice race, I want to do well in Doozy. Let me focus on Doozy. So we came back home, I told my mom, I said, mom, you know, this sport, there are some two black guys are doing well, and they're doing well in Doozy. My mom didn't know Doozy, but I said, yeah, in Doozy, and I want to do well in Doozy, I want to get a gold medal. So I said, go for it, my child. You never know. And I trained. I went to school, come back from school, never studied, put the books away, go for training. So in 2010, luckily, I was elected to go to Tunisia. So I was so excited. I'd never been in the airport. So I took my mom, the club took my mom and my dad. They took us in the airport. I was so excited to be in the airport. And I was in the plane. I was so happy. I went to Tunisia. I raced so hard. I came back with 2 gold medals. So I saw the sport is coming along. My goals or my dreams are coming along. But my main focus was on Doozy. So as Pierre said, in 2013, I did Doozy. They bought me a new boat because I was the strongest. I was a competent peddler in Soweto. They bought me a new boat, they bought me new clothes, new life jacket, new shoes. So I was like, I was going to win the race. And I did the race very well, and then I came number 11. To come number 11, you're the first guy to be called to get a silver medal. And when they call you, they tell you to go in the tent, behind the main tent to get your silver medal there. You don't go there. They don't clap hands for you. you just go in the tent and receive the gold medal to the timekeepers. So I was the first guy to be called, and I was inside. I thought to myself, it's not the end of the road. There's still more duty to come. And luckily, I heard some Pierce's friend talking in the background, saying, "Our Pierce didn't finish. He had some bad luck. He's still coming." And you know, we've been as a youngster, we've been looking up on the guys like Pierce, Jack, because they were doing well in Joburg. We always received these peddling magazines, and we used to see these guys, and we used to go to Emarensha and peddle with these guys. We always had this wish that one day we wish to be in the boat with these white guys that are doing well. So I saw an opportunity there. I said to myself, this is my opportunity to wait in the finish line, even though Pierce is coming last. To wait in the finish line and ask him, can I do the race? And I waited there. He came. And I went to him, I said, "Well done, man, you finished your race." He looked at me with a pity face, he said, I said, "Can I do a race with you next year?" He said to me, "Why don't you ask?" I told him, I said, I finished number 11 to make him, to boost his confidence. I said, I finished number 11. He said, "Yeah, well done, man, you did well." I said, "Can I do a race with you next year?" He said, "No, why don't you get someone who's good, who is in top 20? I said, "No, I just want to do the race with you next year." He said, "Yeah, I will think about it." I said, I had some hopes because he said he will think about it. And we came in Joburg. Luckily, in our club, this guy, Brad Fisher, he's Pierce's friend. So I went to him because he was open. I went to him. I said, "Can you please smooth talk Pierce? Tell him that I'm a rising star. I'm doing well. Can he consider doing the race with me next year?" And Brad Fisher worked his magic. He went to Pierce. And when I came to Tamriel, and Pierce said to me, "No, let's jump in the K2. Let's do the race." And since from then, we did a race.
So, Siseko loves that part about where I came last in. he never neglects to emphasize it. But I think it needs a little bit of contextualizing before we move on. So, I ended there at the start of the 2013 race. I've let him get a bit ahead there, so I was just catch up my side of the story a bit. Yeah. But so there was 39, trying to get a 10th gold medal, and I was, the Doozy is a 3-day race. I wasn't having a particularly good race. I'd been a bit sick. I was maybe a bit old. I don't know what, but I had any number of excuses, but it wasn't going very well. And on the third day of the race, you paddle across the Inanda Dam. You've joined the Mgeni River. So it starts off in the Umzunduzi River, joins the Mgeni River. It's now a much bigger, wider river. And there's a section about 18 kilometers or an hour or so from the finish where the river narrows and it goes down a weir. There's a water pump house there. They call it Pump House Weir. And I was approaching the weir outside of the top 10. If you shoot this weir, I mean, it's dangerous, it's big. It's probably, from the top of the screen, slopes down at sort of a 45-degree angle to the floor, about this far. And this entire river is channeled into quite a small space. There's white water. It's aerated there. It's quite a dangerous thing. If you shoot the weir, you'll make up about a minute or so. But there's the danger that something could go wrong. Right after the weir, there's a dangerous set of rapids, also in a narrow stretch of the river. And most of the guys don't shoot the weir. They do a quick run around it, get back in the other side, and take the minute loss. And that's how they race it. But I thought I'd better shoot it. I was behind trying to make up time. I shot this weir, and in the film they actually did justice to the races, to that race and that event. They showed it quite well, so I'm just going to show you pretty much what happened. Maybe I must just press on the right computer. That will help. So, you know, you have to just excuse the actors. They're not as nearly as good looking. what I mean is my wife is a lot prettier than the girl in the movie. But, you know, this is what happened. I smashed my boat in half. You know, those top boats are made of Kevlar. It's what bulletproof vests are made of. They're strong. But as I slid down that weir, my paddle snapped. I fell out the boat, not dissimilar to what they showed in the movie, and I ended up having to walk to the end of the race. You know, there are a number of things. I've always felt that if you start a challenge like this, you've got to do your absolute best to finish it. You really must. But the other thing is that if you give up because you're not going to win, or you're not going to win a gold, or you're not going to. To me, I think it's almost like it detracts from the achievement of the majority of the competitors. You know, most people are there to finish the event, get a bronze medal or whatever it is, a finisher's medal. Those 2,000 people are there to finish. And if you're going to give up just because you're not going to win, or you're not going to get what you set out, your goal that you set out to do, I think it's insulting. So I had to get to the finish. Felt it was important. There are also limited ways to get to the finish from there. So, by the time I eventually got to the finish, I mean, it was thorns and brambles, and it was, I was chased by dogs. I had a torrid time up and down cliffs. The pathways just run out, and you've got to find another way swimming across the river with these two halves of a boat. I eventually got to the finish. It was getting dark. It was about 6 o'clock in the evening there at Blue Lagoon. There were a couple of fishermen still there, but no spectators, or very few spectators, no. The prize giving was over. The marquee had been packed up. Everyone had gone home. Even my second, you know, the person who drives your car to the finish for you, had given my keys to the timekeeper and had gone. So things were pretty bleak. And as I crossed the finish line, as Sirko said, he was there and he'd waited. And he asked me to do the race the following year. Now, it did take a bit of convincing. At first, I didn't want to see a boat again. I didn't want to see another paddle. I'd had enough. I'd really had a tough day, and I wasn't interested at all. But it was an up-and-coming, well, rising star in the Soweto club. And thanks to some smooth talking, as Sirko said, from a guy called Brad Fisher, I did eventually agree to do the race with him. So we started training for the following year, the 2014 Doozy. And you know, paddling a double canoe is a bit like doing a three-legged race. You know, you can take the fastest two runners here in this room and pair them up against everybody else in a three-legged race. They might not win, because if their stride lengths are too different, they're not going to combine, and they're not going to be able to work together well enough to win the race. And when we started paddling together, it's very similar in a canoe. It's a case of you need that synergy. You need that teamwork. You need to understand each other. You need to work together. We had very different strokes, very different stroke rates, and very different styles of paddling. Now, what you generally tend to do is you put the more experienced guy in front, because they drive the boat through the rapids. They choose the channels. They make the decisions. The tactical, it's a very tactical sport. Make the tactical decisions about which parts you're going to run, which parts you're going to paddle, etc. And so I started off sitting in the front of the boat, and what we found was our boat just went nowhere. You know, we were paddling here at Emerentia Dam. There were guys beating us who we should have been so much better than, and we were really battling. I'm going to hand over to Sirko to tell a little bit about his
cool, yeah, that's correct.
Training together.
our boat didn't go anywhere when Piers was driving. But I didn't mind that. I was so happy because I was sitting with a guy that I always wished to be in the boat with. And when Brad Fisher saw that, he came to us and said, why don't you swap? Why don't I sit in front and I sit in the back? And Pierce sit in the back. So, first of all, when Pierce said to me, when he broke the news that we're going to pedal together, I was so happy. But things changed that I had to eat proper. I had to wake up in time. You know, I always late. So he used to shout at me, like, why are you late? Even though I had my own reasons. And it was like a change in my life. And when Brett suggested that I had to sit in front of a boat, I was so angry. I thought Piers will say to me, no, it's over. I don't want to play with you because you want to be in charge. You want to control everything. And but Piers said, no, you can sit in front. And I thought, yo, this will be hard to me because my English wasn't that proper, still battling in English. And I was still from high school. And I thought to myself, when he speaks some big words, how could I reply? Because I'll be tired. But I said to myself, let me take chances. Let me just sit in front and see how it goes. And I did sit in front, and our boat just took off. We went so fast. We were doing so well. We made up some time. We trained so hard, and we got the speed that we needed. While we were training, I injured myself. We were running with the boat, so I injured myself. So I thought, let me not tell him, let me just keep it a secret. But it was hurting. I said, let's stop. I injured myself. Something minor, I'll put ice in the morning and I'll be fine. He said to me, are you sure? I said, no, I'm sure, I'll be fine in the morning. Because I did not tell him because, you know, I grew up in this environment where when you hurt yourself, the guys will just send you back at home. They said, because you're not capable to be in our group, just go back at home. So I thought Piers would say to me, because you injured yourself, let's don't do it doozy. Let me find another partner. But Piers was more supportive. He said to me, no, I took you to a doctor in Morningside. And that doctor helped me. He put me in this scanning machine. And he came to me, he said, your bones are weak. I said, my bones are weak? He said, yeah. You know, in my mind, I had that thing in my mind. My dad used to say to me, if you want to be strong, my son, you must eat a lot of pap. And I thought, that means my dad was lying because I was eating a lot of pap. And suddenly the doctor saying to me, my bones are weak now. But they said, no, these things happen. I said, okay. And I had to, Piers used to fetch me at home, used to leave me in this morning side. I used to train this, treat me anti-gravity running machine. So I managed to keep on training there, but I wasn't putting too much pressure in my leg. Piers used to run alone, but our pedaling used to pedal together, but we used to not run. I thought that would affect our doozy, because doozy is about running. You like pedaling like 20 minutes or 10 minutes and you run a lot. You run in that steep hill. So I said to myself, this is the end of my doozy. I won't do well in my doozy. But I was fine. I said, let me take chances, we'll do doozy. And we trained. And sadly, we missed a lot of races. We missed these qualifying races. So doozy, to be in the front row, you have to do some seeding races. So we missed those seeding races because of my leg. So we had to start in row number two. So if you start in row number two, you like 50-50. You don't have a chance to get a gold medal. You do have a chance to get a gold medal, but our running wasn't that strong enough, so we thought we won't get any gold medal. So we thought, let's just give it a go and do our doozy.
So, as Seseko says, it was a real disadvantage for us, lining up in the second row of the start of the doozy. I mean, it's divided into batches. You've got A batch, B batch, C batch, all the way down to about, I don't know, M, N, O. But their front batch, the A batch, is divided into those three rows of 20. So it was a little bit disappointing that, because having missed the qualifying races, firstly, because the boat wasn't going well when I was in the front, and secondly, because of Seseko's injury, we were starting at a little bit of a disadvantage. But I'm going to show a little clip from the film You know, for the film, they actually used some live footage as well. So intermixed with the actors and what they reshot. And I'm just going to stop it there where you see the start of the race. And it is the live footage, and you can actually see where we are. And we'll carry on from there with the race.
Good boy, carry on. Warm soap in a castle, yaman. I don't walk to freedom.
I
am not.
So you'll see there's a boat here in the second row. Here we are here. That's really straight after the start. We got such a great start. Seseko has such good speed. His stroke rate was so much faster than mine that it forced me I paddled a slower, more powerful stroke rate. It forced that power to come through quicker. And as soon as the circle was driving the boat, we had such good speed that we had the most awesome start at the start of the race. We went from the second row. We were up after about 3 minutes here. You paddle along this flat stretch of river. There's a weir there, Ernie Pierce Weir. You go down that weir. Then there's another about a 10-minute paddle, and you come to a second weir. And by that point, there were three boats, I think, in front, and then a group of eight boats from fourth to 12th position. And we were right in there at the back of that bunch. So we, right from the start, we were up inside the top 10, and things were going well and really looking good. So I'm going to play a little bit here. Then after this clip, there's a little bit of live footage, which I'm going to show, and then I think we'll reflect on and talk about what actually happened. So that was taken from the actual race, and then the next extract is the Supersport coverage, where they actually captured what happened in the next wheel.
Just behind them, it's rush hour as A-Batch crams down the weir side by side, bumping and barging, and there's drama with some big names in trouble. Pierce Cruikshanks and Seseko Ntordinho out here, also Lance Kime and Tulani Mbanjwa. Huge upset in the first few minutes of the race.
So, would you care to explain, Seseko? So I just had to get a little bit of revenge at some point.
Yeah. As Pierce said, we did a fantastic start, and we made up. We were in top 12, so we were in the bunch from number 3 to number 12. So we were happily in top 10, and we went so well in the first rapid. We made it clean. In the second rapid, it's where I broke my pedal. I didn't know what happened, but I fell off, then I pressed my pedal, then it gets snapped. So Pierce didn't see what happened, because my pedal gets snapped, and then it came back, and it flipped back, it was like correct again. But I saw it, I couldn't continue with it. So I jumped out of the boat, I didn't tell him what's happening, just ran to as you saw me there, I was going to ask for a spare pedal. When I was going to everyone who was watching, and I was going to them, can you please borrow me a spare pedal? Because I couldn't see our seconders. And everyone was saying, no, we're waiting for our guys. What will happen if I give you this pedal and they have similar incident? So I had to find our seconders. Luckily, I saw them in the distance. So I ran straight to them. I didn't talk to them. Just grabbed the spare pedal that they were having. So I had to head back to Pierce now. I was so, I'd say I was so heartbroken, disappointed, and I was feeling, I had this thing that it's my fault, and Pierce will shout at me in the boat. I thought to myself, why am I going back there? Because the guy, will say to me, this is your fault, man, this is your fault, you made this thing. And everyone was gone, we were the last guy in that bench. But I said, let me go and face Pierce. I went to him, he was already sitting in the boat, putting his plushie, he was waiting for me. So I said to myself, oh, this guy will shout at me. And when I was like getting in the boat, like I was ready that he can shout now. And luckily, Pierce said some good words. He said to me, oh, it's a bad luck, man. Do this 3-day race. So if we give up now, that means we don't care about our race. That means we're not dedicated. That means we're not working together. So he said to me, think about it. Do this 3-day race. We had like 5 minutes accident. What happening in the front guys? What are the front guys doing? What don't you think if they having some similar accident? So we mustn't give up. Must keep on going. So from then, I said to myself, because the guy believes on me, so he want this partnership to work together. So I said, I'll give him everything that I got. I was going as hard as I can. I was killing myself. Even though when I was tired, he will ask me, hey man, how are you feeling there in front? I'll say to him, I'm still fresh, even though I was tired.
I just want to say that, you know, when you're running up some of those hills, they're so steep and it's such hard work. And this guy's just running and you're following because you don't want to let him down either. And you think, if you could just take a few steps easy here, it's just, how are you doing there, Suseko? And you'd say, I'm fresh. And it was the last thing in the world that I wanted to hear.
I said that because I thought, if I say to him I'm tired, he will say to me, you had a 5 minutes rest. How can you be tired now? So since from there, we went so hard. Luckily, our combination since from then, we caught a lot of guys. We made up our time. In day one, we amazing. We did well and we were in top 10.
So, you know, I think in the making of a film, it's you got an hour 40 to tell a story that for us was a year long experience. And you know, over the course of the year's journey, we developed quite a trust in a partnership. You do, you know, you're relying on the other guy. You're pinning your dreams together. And we developed a really good understanding in the boat and a trust. I kind of condensed that sort of experience in many ways in the film. And one of the things they did was they took this incident where we were out running the one day training, running with our boat in the botanical gardens at Emerentia. And this little dog came running and chased Suseko. And I chased, you know, he's scared of little dogs. And I chased the owner and the dog and whatever. Anyway, they showed this scene in the film in a slightly different way, you know, where Steve, who's my character, and Duma run in there, and Duma runs away from the dog, and Steve says, what are you worried about? That thing's tiny. And they have this this understanding where Steve says to him, you've got to look the dog in the eye. And it becomes like a mantra for them in the film. You've got to look the dog in the eye. You've got to face your fears. And, you know, we came up to that final weir, that pump house weir in the river. And by that stage, we already knew that we were going to shoot it because we built our trust. We knew our partnership was good. I believed in Suseko in shooting it. But in the movie, it's all kind of a last-minute thing. And you'll see Steve doesn't want to shoot it, and Duma says his leg's hurting from his injury, which, I mean, was fairly true in that. And Duma says to Steve, look the dog in the eye. And so I'm going to show this clip from the film, which I think represents sort of towards the end of the race quite well.
I nearly started 5 seconds. Here, 3, 2, 1, go.
they're shooting Pampas.
Why are they shooting Pampas?
I don't know, but they're shooting Pampas.
Yeah, just keep the left and hold on. Okay. Okay, let's do it.
Just I just want to say first of all thank you to the Actuarial Society for inviting us and having us here to share our journey with people. It's been the greatest privilege of all. First of all, having the amazing experience that we enjoyed, and then having it extended through a film, a book as well, and having now the chance to come and chat to people and share the experience has been incredible. Thank you to Siam for the invitation. And I'm going to just let Siseko maybe finish off with a few words as well.
Thank you, Piers. First of all, receiving that gold medal, take it back at home. My mom was so happy. I told him that one day I will get this gold medal in Tuzi. She was so excited. She said to me, my son, you can dream more. And since from then, my dad. I used to tell my dad, dad. Where I played in Marensha, I used to meet these big company guys that owns companies. And he said, is that true, my child? I said, yeah, it's true. I meet CEO of Eurosteel. He said, my son, where I work, I never meet the CEO of the company. So you must stay in the spot and you must look ahead. You never know what will come with. And since from then, my community were like, a lot of young kids, they were allowing their kids to come to play the sport because they also had that fear. But now, since I show that the sport it's not a harm in the community, so they let their children to come and join the club. And they're paying a lot back to our community because it's changing a lot of youngsters' life because they took us to school. If not doing well at school, they said you're not going to a race, so you have to focus at school and do well in sport. And they're giving some career guidance because, growing up in Soweto, you don't have this thing in your mind that one day you become someone important in life, but since in sport you're meeting some people important, so you have this dream that also you want to feel important, so you have to study, do something well. And I'd like to thank you guys for allowing us to come and talk, and I hope you inspired. Thank you.
Okay, guys, so we're a bit behind time, but let's just take a quick comfort break, grab a coffee, 10 minutes, and then we're back for the last talk.